somebody hit the light in the back.
Thanks. Okay, so pretty much, like, everybody, there's like four faces in this room that I know haven't seen this talk, or I think haven't seen this talk. Pretty much everybody else has, so I'm going to try and whip through the initial materials if there's time for questions and whatnot, but this is a pretty hacked up talk, given this number of different events, conferences, etc. So eye context, and I've used jails a lot for a long time, for a number of years, late 90s. Let me see, you've used it for software development purposes and for different types of infrastructure deployment involving servers. So I'm not a committer, and I'm not real religious. I like jails a lot. I talk a lot about them, I use them a lot, I do a lot with them. But this isn't about, you know, OS bashing, or this is about how jails have been applied to particular problems. This is a lot of info for 1 hour, so I'm just going to rip through all of this really fast, try to save stuff for the end. An announcement, or a warranty. So I'm going to try and stay really close to classic Unix principles and processes. Right? So no fancy magic. Trying to keep things really simple, because I like magic screws me up. So I assume you all know the basics of this. Well, there's all kinds of funny slides in here. So the first bit of this is like a little bit of a conceptual exercise talking about what jails are and virtual machines. So what is it? I've got a quote from a different talk. On jails, Marshall's clue, electrical circuitry, extension of the human nervous system. So, let me see, I've compared jails for a long time to something kind of like a skyscraper, which we all take for granted, we live in the city. Skyscraper took a long time to actually manifest the idea of many compartmentalized different things happening within one structure and building vertically, and all the history of Manhattan, and blah, 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 blah. All kinds of interesting stuff. And anybody who knows much about skyscrapers knows that they wouldn't be anywhere without elevators. And elevators came from Elijah Otis, and they were originally a carnival thing on Coney Island, where there were all kinds of inventors doing weird stuff. I kind of feel like Paul Hennenkamp is a lot like Elijah Otis in this respect. But I don't believe Paul Hennenkamp has been to Coney Island. So you're looking at the scale of the internet and the growth of the internet, and like I'm really obsessed with, I love Manhattan, I love urban development. I started looking at the growth of the internet and the various needs of what happens on the internet, and I started thinking about servers and data centers and things like this, like their cities. To me, the actual physical form of a data center feels a lot like a city. So, all right, this is a quick bit on scale, patterns, and complexity. Has anybody seen Powers of Ten? Charlton Raheem's. Okay, cool. It's this awesome, for everybody else, awesome film that Charlton Raheem did for IBM in whatever dates in there somewhere. 77. Thank you. They did this in 77, and they zoomed, they started right here in a guy sleeping at a picnic in Chicago on Lakeshore Drive. And they zoom all the way out into the cosmos and past the Milky Way at these orders of magnitude, powers of 10, right? And then they zoom back in and go into his hand and the cells and blah, 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 down the atomic level. And to the extent of our knowledge at that time, and this is a pretty awesome 20-minute flick. And what always struck me in this, and struck a lot of people, is there's always these patterns that reemerge, right? There's different visual in the film, at least visual patterns, structural patterns. I love patterns. Similarity. So this is my little universe of this. A bunch of people have seen this before, and it starts way out, you know, with the satellites and coming in around the Earth and the internet and electrical grids coming into Manhattan, and you pass the nightclub meeting and into a data center, and you know, we all know what this this stuff looks like, right? Networks, power infrastructure. There's a guy sleeping in this one too. And then we get into the server, and we get into the server hardware. We all know what that stuff is made out of. You hit your network port, and suddenly we're off into listening sockets, and we get to our Unix system. And we get to our applications that are running our Unix system, right? And whatever applications are powering all, whatever software's powering this. And then in the corner, that little thing was found at a very small scale in the corner of a data center, and I was told that it would belong to the NSA. The all of that crazy complexity just to pull up a web page, right? It takes that all of that, and now we got, you know, right here, the nice little home page. Well, there's more formal views of this topology, right? Right here we've got the OSI model as a description of all kinds of many layers here. I like mine better. So another thing, talking about jails and virtualization of servers, you get into hardware has gotten, we have Moore's Law, hardware gets faster, cheaper, not worth discussing. Anybody want to stay on this slide for 20 minutes? Let me see. So we're here to talk about Unix systems. This is one view of Unix systems, kind of modeled after a picture I saw once of the Linux kernel. And you have your hardware devices, everything wrapped around the kernel, all of your user land utilities. And so Unix can be complicated or it can be simple. But really what it boils down to in BSD land is real severe definition of kernel, user land, devices, what this computer does in the physical world. So, you know, you can look at this stuff and think that it's really, really complicated, it is very complicated actually, when you start drilling in on the details. But a server is also a really simple thing. Let me see. This is a quick little pattern exploration. Anybody know? Some people can read it. Fractal math. If anybody's into fractal math, this is what Julia said. And find that there's patterns that scale up and down with the Julia set here. And we're all the way out, bang, we see it, kind of. Well, this was boy, this feels old and clunky to come through. I'm just going to pass this. Wow. Look, so you get this idea of virtual Unixes, right? Same pattern inside of itself. Look, these ideas are virtual machines, all this wild stuff. These ideas are not old. This is the original cloud, all right? Like, period. The original Unix time sharing system paper. Let me see. There's no audio really for this, but this is an old video of the Blit. Say what?
You can sing along with
it. I need my wife to do the singing. So here they are talking about the Blitz and how, you know, early computers really you couldn't run more than one program at a time. But now we have these multi-processing computers. And, you know, now we need a multi-processing terminal. And suddenly you have Rob Pike and all this wildness and something with Windows popping up. Anyways, you get the idea. Most of that abstract is over. Let's get a little more down to earth with what real world things would require to take and virtualize the whole operating system. External security threats, right? Containment. Development messes. Containment. Usually untrusted users. Here's a bunch of hackers. Capture the flag. DEFCON. Ooh, scary. Yeah, these are not mutually untrusted users I'm usually so worried about. These ones are. All right, so these are a bunch of people waiting on, in this case, the subway shared infrastructure. And this guy over here on the left, he is not to be trusted in this woman's kitchen. And she is not to be trusted with his motorcycle, conversely, right? So mutually untrusted users does not always mean a room full of hackers, but it actually does also mean a room full of hackers. including all of you. So, how'd that get in there? So, mutually interested users, what do they do? Look at these ladies. Anybody, who's hosting their website nowadays? Is that, that's somebody in the back.
What Nice Bug is?
Say what?
Nice Bug site?
No, who's hosting these ladies' website nowadays, right? And here, you know, mutually entrusted users do dumb things. There's a guy on a metal ladder, barefoot, with an electric drill in a swimming pool. Awesome, right? People do really dumb stuff inside of machines. People have, like, totally, like, I don't even know what you're doing with that machine. That's not just hype. We're not even on the same level. Some people are really abusive with machines. It's really difficult, right? and then there's cultural differences, right? Between developers, between SAs, like, you're running what? You just loaded Webmin up on top of, like, our databases? No. Right? So, get into situations where you have culture clashes on what's important, and figure out what software is important. And then you have software. Software is, of course, perfect, right? We're all BSD users. We're all cherry, right? And you have SAs, right? Professionals, developers, software, anybody working in technology IT. We're all professionals, and we make the work. SAs make the worst mistakes on a daily basis, right? And so what happens, how do we solve this problem of shared infrastructure, having one mutually interested user sour the pot for everyone else?
Compartmentalization.
Perfection. Let's just lock it down. Let's not allow any of these hijinks, okay? How many have been in the city since 2001? For a few years there, that was not a real fun way to live our lives, right? And once upon a time, computing was fun. Unix was fun, right? I want to bring, and over the years have brought some of this fun back into basically daily life and using machines. And, you know, to me, this is all about all of the mutually entrusted users, right? Love these people, hate these people. There's
a lot of people using that.
All right, so you get the idea. Going through all this. Even more practical, for a little second more, why would you want to use virtual machines in the first place? I mean, same old junk. That's a machine. That rack is filled with 1 gigabyte SCSI hard drives, right? Just think of how much electricity that thing's draining. And you got 3 web servers, local use DNS cache, file server that 2 people use all day long, and 2 dev servers, right? How many people have stuff like this buried in their universe that they maybe think about once a week? Right. Okay. So, you know, you can take a brand spanking new gray box, whatever, server, and load all of that stuff up as a jail. And all of those servers will run wonderfully. You can buy 2 of these things, copy it, and you're suddenly doing redundant jailing. We'll talk more about that towards the end bit. And you got costs. How many people think a lot about power in their day-to-day? Like, yeah, everybody in the room. Yep. So, jails. So jails come along. Doug McElroy wrote for write programs to do one thing, do it well. He wrote pipes. Let's see. Definitions of what a jail is. Jail is a user space utility, right? It's just like ifconfig, like any other tool for doing something in your system. It produces a virtual system image, which is a process tree. All right. So jails do not, when you call the jail userland tool, you don't have to actually create a full virtual server. You can use it like chroot. How many people are familiar with chroot? Yeah, okay, everybody. So I'm going to move faster. Great. Where's jail? System calls to imprison processes. Ah, difference between it and chroot? It's bound to the IP stack, right? This is really important. The entire purpose of why jail was written was to get beyond set UID hacks or escaping from CH root via SetUID hacks. Okay. So for network applications. Which is not. It's not a classic machine emulator. This is not Zen. This is not QAMU. This is not, you know, any one of any real virtual machine. It's also not chroot, right? This is really designed for and really beneficial for running network applications servers. Great uses for JADL are resource sharing, blah, 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 blah. This is a list of, of all the reasons nobody needs to be sold on this stuff. Core uses for JADL. You don't get a kernel. Doing anything with kernel? Yep, you're bound to your host's kernel. Limited network interface access, although some of that's changing as vImage gets a little more mature. We'll get to that in the end too. When, you know, there's a number of cases where chroot will totally do the job. You don't need to build a jail just so that you can chroot some kind of contains compiled software, for example, something else. Some applications require particular low-level syscalls that are that defeat the purpose of jailing, especially things that have to do with shared memory. Notably, Postgres still, that's actually an incorrect old slide. Postgres can run somewhat securely in jail. We'll get to that later. We'll keep going on later. Out of jail, so the definitive instructions are in man nature. That's it. It's on, if you write in the previous D-box, you have everything you need. You compile your usland from source, right? You assign it an IP address, which in my day-to-day is probably the most lengthy part of this process. Hey, we need to provision something, I'm gonna FERC. And you run the jail call with the IP, the usland, and it boots the jail, so to speak. It's not really a boot, but it runs everything at from RC onward in your BSD system. And so a practical comparison, going back to that diagram from before, you got everything that a regular box has. You just don't have a kernel. And instead of being on a piece of metal, you're in a hat. You're in a directory structure, right? Is this clear? Any questions so far at this point? None. Awesome. Okay. So making a jail. These are going to go real fast, because when I looked at this, this was like super ancient cooking show. I was like, wow, I did this with FreeBSD 6.2. Yikes. So host machine is, FreeBSD 6.1. Can everybody even read that?
No.
Nobody can read that. Yeah, I just looked back and I can barely read it. Okay, so try to whip through it fast anyways, because it's not real legible. So you get the source to build with. How many people are familiar with the FreeBSD build world, build kernel? Pretty much everybody. Okay, cool. All right, so you get your source. You build according to some kind of specific instructions which are in the jailman page, right? Which basically are just like, build it to this directory. That's it. If you want to be a smart pants, you may, after you build it, tar it up and save it for later, so you don't have to compile it again. If you're going to build from source, make directory, use local jails, you make a directory. In this case, I made user local jails. So now I got the directory made, built from source, using CVSup. Oh, wow. Compile.
CSup.
Okay, so what we just did with build is that we just took and made a directory and populated with all the userland utilities that are part of the stock system. So now we get into mounting our devices, right? FreeBSD past FreeBSD 5, all devices are mounted in the old core stuff when jailing was first built. They compile, right? They were a build process. And you went into the jail and removed all of these devices. It was a lot bigger pain. Now we have, mount DevFS, mount PROCFS, and in your DevFS rule set, there's rule sets for which devices you want to expose and you not want to expose. The idea would...
Do you stick to the default rule sets for your jails, or do you update that offense?
No, not necessarily. I mean, how can I put it? There is a specific jail-oriented DevFS rule set in the stock system. If you're loading your jails from RC, the way that the previous handbook shows you how to do, it's going to use that DevFS rule set. There's going to be a whole ton of stuff missing, right? You'd have to start enabling a bunch of things to say get X to work properly, or if you wanted to have a remote X terminal. Let me say a couple of other things.
Has the default rule set ever caused a problem for you?
Yes. So FSTAT, one of my favorite utilities, FSTAT. Hey, files, what's open, what's not? The FSTAT requires a couple of memory devices. It requires some access to memory. So that's one particular case. Building X, if you want to build X and you want to run a remote X external, right? You actually need more, if you're going to build, sorry, I'm getting dry, hold on a sec. Another place where you end up getting bit by those DevFS rules and will need to come up with your own custom rule set would be X11, right? So if you're going to build X and you want a remote X server, then you're going to actually need to tweak your rule set. There's a lot of people who've done it. There's a lot of info online on how to accomplish that.
But what about for your needs in terms of infrastructure? Is there a place for me?
No, at this point, yes. Actually, at this point, I'm sticking to very, very close to, and I'm about to recommend differently than I have in the past, staying very close to the RC jail start subsystem, mostly related to security vulnerabilities involving mounting and unmounting your dev and pocket FS.
That's rules for jails.
Yeah.
Tweaking, nothing else. Careful tweaking.
Yeah, you want to be really, really careful with your tweaking. I'll get into why mounting your DevFS and your PROCFS are both very, very dangerous operations depending on the context of how you're using your jail systems. I'll get to that in just a second. So preplay, that's a null kernel. Boy, that's old school stuff. It's just to make a null kernel. Did that back in the 4 days because nobody knew what would happen. There wasn't a thing in your root partition that's a kernel. So, just touch a file. Well, you don't need to do that. Let me see, config host. Let me see, there's some little bits in here which I'm just going to bypass real fast on. RC.com in your jail. It's all on the man page, but there's some little gotchas in there. Like if you try to define any network interfaces and you don't define, if you don't put the line in for network interfaces and just quotes, then your RC scripts will start and throw a bunch of junk into messages, Barlog messages on your host. And there's a bunch of little teeny gotchas, but they're nothing that will hurt you really. Preflight on the master system. So you got one issue on the master system, right? Say we access a server over the network via SSH. If SSH is listening on all network interfaces, because the host's hardware server is running the network interfaces, if it's listening on all IPs, if SSH is listening on all IPs on the host server, then you may run into really bizarre problems where the jailed SSH may or may not pick up the call from somebody trying to connect to it. So just some really simple things. Like everybody in the room who's worked with any of this is so not rocket science to go into your SSH config and say, I'm only going to listen on this one IP address. Ta-da, on your host hardware. And from that point forward, you won't have any collisions with IPs that you delegate to your jails. So far, no magic, right? So let me see. And when you're configuring, this is from the previous new main page for jail, it's really that long, like configuring a jail. Like this is incredibly short amount of material. It's really straightforward. Let's see. Basically, then you can just call jail without executing the RC scripts, and it will actually pull you, if you call it a shell, it would be just like CHrooting or something along those lines. And from there, you can do your initial configuration, kind of like when you're installing on a host and you're going through the initial install steps. And it can even run at that point. SysInstall, if you so desire, you can also just set these things on your phone. Set the time zone, network options, what you're doing in the jail. Check the RC comp, jail specifics, blah, 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 blah. Okay, so now we have, what have we done? We've populated all this stuff out in Etsy. We've mounted devices, and selectively mounted devices inside the jail. Things that it needs, like that null. And next thing you know, let me see, you just call this, give yourself an IP address. An IP address, of course, is just using ifconfig. I mean, this is where this gets really, really boring for everybody in the room. You assign an IP address to the machine, you call,
what's the problem when you're doing multiple IPs?
Is that just one more thing? All right, so you used to be able to, I guess this is a new thing for everybody. You used to be able to only assign one IP address to a jail for a long, long, long time. Now, since previously 8.8.0, you can assign multiple IP addresses. That obviously means that you can use IPv6 addresses as well. A strategy for BSDs before that is to NAT all of these things to all these other IPs to an internal network, more or less on the FreeBSD machine. That was how in 2001 we were running a web hosting company where we had all of these turnkey jail systems. It was a very effective strategy because we could it made it very fluid for us to move the systems around and maintain the customer's internet facing IP addresses. And digress. Now you can just add them in the jail command, in the jail start command, what IP address they need to have.
As another alias.
Yeah. Yeah, you just need to light it as an alias. And if you're using the, I can have some words on the RC subsystem in a minute, but if you're using the RC subsystem, there's provisions there to add multiple IPs of V4 or V6 or V10 or 20 or 50. No, of various varieties. That IP is just an IP. So we've got our IP address allocated on the host, we've got devices mounted, we've got our user land built, we've got our configs in. So let's start this thing. Well, here's the ugly, here's some bad stuff. This was old practice. For a long time I argued against using the RC subsystem after running jails in the context of an ISP. You have 100 machines on a piece of hardware, 100 servers on a piece of hardware. One of them has a problem with an application during its own startup. If you're trying to boot the box and all of these virtual machines are coming up at boot with a piece of hardware, you could be in a lot of trouble because we may hang at boot for the whole machine and have a lot of trouble resolving this particular problem. Where you really want to go on with, you know, kill a server. If you're not starting from RC, you're starting each server individually. Well, if one of them's got a problem, you can kill whatever you're doing, move on to starting up the rest of the servers if you are running off that machine, and come back and focus on the problem child, right? So with that stated, there were some very interesting attacks that made all of my arguments made me go, oh, okay, never mind. There's some very interesting attacks with symlinks inside of dev and proc inside of jails, right? So a symlink, when the host sees it inside of a jail, will basically symlink to that path on the host server. So an attacker, somebody with malicious intent, could drop a symlink into your, because they have root inside of this GL server, drop in a symlink that when DevFS or ProcFS, actually, we have a little DevFS is where all the attacks came from, ProcFS, kind of silly, but theoretically it's possible to do these two things. Basically, what would happen is the host server is applying mount DevFS, right? This is a process owned by the root user on the host piece of hardware. If this, there's a symlink that mounts over something really important to you.
Out of the jails?
Out of the jails, yeah.
RC.
Yeah. So if an attacker was able to, say, dive into the jail and craft some really sneaky things that somehow during, at some stage of the RC process, or maybe while the machine was running previously, put a symlink into dev that, say, took dev null and overwrote etcrc.conf on the host server. It could be in a lot of trouble, right? That's a bad situation. You could also have it overwrite something like etc master password, right? And since a mount operation needs to be run through, it can create a lot of trouble. Well, there's all this wonderful glue in the RC subsystem scripts to basically take care of these particular contingencies as soon as they're recognized. So this is the first thing that everybody's like, wow, big security vulnerability. Yeah, fair enough. Big security vulnerability. So I don't recommend using stuff that I used to, which was, hey, just write your own start script. I actually recommend using the RC subsystem. Whether you start at boot or not is another question, right? And that's up to you to decide based on context. Your mileage may vary. If you're lighting up two servers and they're a real simple thing on a piece of hardware, then it may just get something, a piece of noise out of your way. If you're lighting up 100 servers that have a lot of activity of different types, this could create a lot of grief for you. This is a philosophical thing, right? I mean, I think a lot of people have argued about all kinds of things. They're starting different servers. I've worked with SAs who are hell-bent on starting databases, and especially databases, with the host, from whatever the host is using on whatever Unix, to start the system. I've worked with guys who absolutely do not want databases starting with the host hardware. What if you're having a problem with some other part of the host or the database itself, and blah, 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 you can't get to the box to fix it. It's all these wonderful arguments, depending on the scale of your organization or what you're doing, but anyways, so I'm kind of, does anybody have any questions about that before I beat it to death too hard? Good.
Yeah, I mean, to me, like, we've got a bunch of boxes running jails of them, and the more jails there is, frankly, the more I want to actually have control and use the startup scripts. I mean, I want to be in a position to actually watch, because it has nothing to do with the quantity, it has everything to do with the quality. If there are jails that are my jails for my purposes, I don't mind if it comes into RC, because if I break it, I break it. Right. But when it comes to a bunch of users who might be technical, might be, you know, potentially malicious.
Yeah.
Of course, I want to actually control an RC. The thought scripts, what happens and how it starts up.
Right.
I mean, to me, it's simple.
Yeah. Right.
You were right with your argument on the thought scripts. Don't run.
Right, but that still doesn't mean that you can't use the RC subsystem to actually start the jails. You could just use one start.
It's easier to troubleshoot when you're sitting there starting individually or in some chronological order.
Absolutely.
That's why I do.
Yep. Yes?
Well, personally, I think you should definitely use the RC stuff to stop it. Just so you don't have to remember and get everything. It's like, oh, I got 67 out of 68.
Yes.
And the 68 one was a database server that didn't recover, and now all 67 are bad.
Right.
I definitely want RC to turn things off.
Yep.
I can see the point of whether or not you want RC to turn things on. But, you know, that would be my sweet spot. It's like, when it's going down, I always want it to go down clean.
Yep. I agree. Completely understood. Well, All right, so start, we've started a jail. Running jails, there's a utility called JLS that lists the running jails. Does anybody know off the top of their, like trivia style, anybody know the big bug in previous V8 with JLS? Anybody? Doesn't work? It works great until you have, that was close. It works great until you have jails that have more than, I believe, 8 IP addresses assigned to them, which in my particular environment, we do. As we're replicating a bunch of services in production and boxes that have a ton of SSL certs. So with that, boxes with more than, I believe, 8 IP addresses, jails that have more than 8 IP addresses cause JLS to core down. Oops, little gotcha. Anyways, it says it came with the feature of being able to add as many IP addresses, or up a tunable up to 256 IP addresses per jail. Which is a statistical tunable. Since it came with that feature, now I'm very happy to live with this bug and move on to 8.1 and 8.2. Let me see. So using the jail, you want to SSH into the jail just like server. There are tools that are certain going into JExec, since this talk is actually very new and very, very, very cool. JExec will execute a, it will execute given a jail ID, jails are assigned a unique ID, which is just an integer, given a jail ID will execute something that exists inside of the jail, a shell for example, right? Now, this is a somewhat dangerous proposition because you have a again, a root process on your host machine that is now executed, that is now spawning a child inside of this jail process. We're breaking the process segregation that's built into jail in the kernel. Places where this has been interestingly exploited, the only place that I know of with any real good stories is DEF CON's Capture the Flag. The Ken Shota group, when they were running the Capture the Flag competition, had this very, very elaborate, very interesting setup that involved jails, that involved VMware, that involved all kinds of kernel hacking, all kinds of craziness because they're trying to build an infrastructure for some of the craziest hackers in the world to play war games. So this is a pretty fun challenge for them, right? How do we maintain a reliable scoring system? How do we maintain, like, how do we keep the thing alive so that we don't just let the whole game drop? That would be boring. Right, so getting into this, they found that when they were using jails, JExec was one of the big weaknesses. They had to hack around it really fast as the game was playing because people in the jail systems would see sudden little dips of root processes that they were using to collect scoring information from inside the jail systems. People then quickly wrote a bunch of UCs, programs in C, and these quick utilities that were way faster than all of their shell script hackery and all that other fun, that basically every time one of those root processes came into the system, they didn't know if it was an opposing team. Every time one of those root processes showed up, kill, bang, right? So the jailer sticks his hand in the cage, the lion bites it off. Jailer sticks his hand in the cage, lion bites it off. So relying on JExec, this is pretty much the closest case where I could say, wow, that's a really concrete, awesome example of why relying on JExec to run your guild server is a really bad idea. And why really doing anything from the host to affect your guild server is a really terrible idea, including CDing into its directory tree, right, in the file system. Running ls is technically a very dangerous thing. Right? Does that all make sense? So when living practically with jails in this mutually trusted environment, treat them really like they are servers. Use SSH. One of the developers in my shop calls it the condom. You know, use SSH. That's what it's, a very sophisticated way to
deal with it. So a jail's root is just as powerful in the jail as the
as the host or...
Inside of the jail, the root user inside of the jail is root inside of the jail. Absolutely.
I never thought about that if you're playing the jail. That's a great point.
Yes, because there isn't, and I kind of get scared of the idea of some idea of super user, right? Like, oh, you know, like it only managed jails with the super user. Like, okay, now we're getting into very, 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 I would say,
crazy
talk. Yeah.
Like, why is it dangerous to do an LS from the host in the jail?
All right, so that's a theoretical. Let me try a different one. That's a little more practical. So I'm saying I can't envision an attack for LS. A good one would be touching a file, say dumping a date stamp on a file, or just writing some data to a file, right? If that file, if you wrote a script that ran into a jail system every once in a while and wrote something to the jail system that maybe the jail picked up from the host, hey, I need this piece of data that's being shared amongst all jails. Here it is. Well, a jail user needs to only make that become a symlink to something else in the files in the system. And again, hey, okay, I'm going to touch this file. Oh, wow, I just, you know, hosed an important system configuration file. Okay? Like, does that do they answer the question? So if anybody comes up with an LS attack, I would totally buy you a drink. That's awesome. Yes?
We're going back to installment jails. Or I forget the name, the port snap thing for the system, this upgrade or whatever.
Yeah.
But can you use that for installing Userland so you can use the standard binary?
No.
This upgrade, whatever the new one is.
Sysjails or
The new base, it's in the base system for basically getting snapshot upgrades and...
If it's new,
it just became part of base. It was before.
It's an A.
I was just finding out earlier before the meeting started about this thing called Facebook, which I just joined, and I cannot wait to link up with all of you.
It doesn't exist.
What? It's in the cloud? Okay, so anyways, like, basically what I'm saying is I don't really know. I really don't know.
I don't know.
I've never done it that way. Actually, in most circumstances, the idea to me of building the base system, configuring and installing a lot of things, and then tarring that up is really appealing so that you can redeploy by, like, tar, right? Tar becomes this awesome deploy mechanism to make new systems. So I don't know. If you find out, tell me. So we all got this SSH into a jail treated like server, just like any server, blah blah blah, and you have root. So this is the big clincher. You got root in this system, you know. And how do you know you're inside a jail? Well, this is kind of dumb because there's all these workarounds for how you know you're inside a jail and how you don't. It doesn't really matter so much. There's all manner of ways to know that you are inside of a jail. Right, so there is one syscall. If you're scripting things that happen inside of jails and outside of jails, different types of configurations, there's a syscall that's, jailed. It's an easy thing to prep for and roll the set out. There's also patches to get rid of that, which I think they're pretty old and they're kind of a silly idea because there's so many other things that give away if you're in jail. Can somebody think of one regarding processes?
Jam.
So what?
They have a J in their state.
They have a J in their state. Okay. That's not the one I was looking for, but that's totally awesome. And yeah. The one I'm looking for is you have no init process. Your processes start at whatever number way up above. So like there's all kinds of very simple things that make you realize like, oh, this is not I'm not on a piece of hardware. There was a hack to the kernel that somebody put out to actually make this value zero while you're inside of a jail. It was a warm-line chain, for whatever reason. All right, so starting and stopping the jail, we've already covered a bunch of this. All right, so here's the other bits of jailing that are really simple things. Using Killo with dash J flag and using that jail ID, that'll kill the jail and all of us is sending children. That's all there is to it. There are also pkill and pgrep and things like that that all have jail flags added to them. And the majority of the niceties in the last 14 years of jails coming around is having things like a is jail flag in your process IDs so that suddenly top now picks up, throw a dash J flag at top, and you'll see your process list and which jail ID it belongs to. This jail ID thing has also gotten really great since this talk was given because in your configuration for your jails, you can actually now specify, I want this host name jail to always be this jail ID. You can now start plugging this into some other form of organizational data-driven, something, a database, a flat file, a whatever, to basically start making your jail IDs a lot more reliable and uniform across machines. Yes?
You were discussing jail IDs in top. Is that also applying to NTOP or?
No. NTOP is not, it's not part of the base FreeBSD system.
It's a port.
Yeah.
Right. If someone were to...
A way to get to the same metric?
Let me see.
Well, you can segregate by IP.
I was going to say, you're already... You already have a hook on the IP address as to what it's doing, so you could actually start filtering all the rest of your network tools based on IP address.
Is there fake MAC addresses for those jail databases?
No, but then that gets in. How to do that on with the. You know what? I'm going to have to look at the config band page to actually figure out if you can do this on one interface. I don't believe you can. Not until we get into
the IP address on
no. Yeah, we give each IP address on one interface.
Put the real interface, the Swiss mode, and then I do like a PF type thing. Some sort of upload that.
I do know that once you get into the
stack layered on top of the more physical.
Once you get into
I'm just curious to like VNet and VBridge.
I'm sorry?
I'm comparing this to like VNet and VRBridge.
Got it. Okay, VNet and VRBridge is what he's bringing up. So there's a virtual networking stack that was modeled a lot more like Sun's Crossbow, at least in the spirit and the use of it. But it's very similar. These tools are all very, very similar. This is the VNet stack. It's really close to being something that doesn't panic your kernel. It's been in that state for a couple of years. The developers have been working very hard on this, but it's been a very big challenge. So the virtual networking stack would enable you to do everything, including run your own firewall, your own, you have a real virtual network interface. I'll get to one more thing in a minute, it's still host-based, so if you're doing setting up a development network in one host, it will allow you to do some things, but no, you don't have that level of flexibility yet. Right? It's definitely in the works. You haven't said anything, so yes.
Yeah, about firewall issues.
Yeah.
Which firewall controls generate two-state tables?
Okay, so depending on which firewall you're using on your FreeBSD machine, right. So you would need to write basically state tables for that particular network interface on the host hardware server at the moment. This is one of the biggest drivers for the vImage work that's being done. As much as everybody wants to have all of this virtual networking just in the base system, nothing to do with jailing, there's all this work being done to make sure that it plays very nicely with jails, because that's one of the big things that a lot of people want. They want PF controls from inside a jail server, right? So are we going to see maybe for FreeBSD 9 will it work? It's already there for you to build in the kernel in FreeBSD 8, but is it there yet? Not quite. Does that kind of answer your question?
Yeah, well, basically, you just have one file to control the firewall.
Yep, it's just on the host.
And you write all your rules within that particular file, depending on the IP address that's been assigned to the jail, or the IP address assigned to the host.
Yep. Yep, that is the answer. And it's the same for every single firewall that you're able to build and run in through EC. Yes?
How does egress work?
I don't know. Yeah. Take care of him. I've had his question. I don't know. I don't know. So I have a bad answer for you on this one, and that is the last time we did D-Trace, I used the old instructions on our dev environment where to really play with this on a couple of boxes and host my D-Trace. And now next morning, like, got all those dev boxes lit? Yeah, now there's So I have been very interested in wanting to actually screw around with that, but I've not had the chance.
So you try to maintain a global unique jail ID across machines, or does that not matter?
You know, I haven't gotten to that level of polish yet. And in the environment that I've been working in, we're just now starting to reap the benefits of uniform UIDs, right? Yay, somebody feels that. So with that stated, we're not there yet. When I get there, I'll be real happy. At the moment, the biggest unique identifier, and this is kind of old school of me because this used to be the only thing you could do, host name, make all your scripts and other things and other accounting and auditing and other utilities, all pin off host name. Now that's also why there's all these syscontrols that don't allow a root user to change the host name of the server, right? That was actually a problem one time when we were running the ISP. Hey, wait a minute, where'd customer food go? I don't know, where are we? But now our tools are working. Now we gotta go dive through all these boxes and find customer food. They changed their host name. That simple. So at this point, there's all these niceties of previous day 8 that are worth mentioning. Like, you can lock down host name changes on a per host basis. Actually, more or less every single thing that used to be a host level syscontrol, you can do on a per jail basis as a charting of the jail, which is a godsend. That's an awesome thing, right? So because different mutually entrusted users may have different needs, and you can start exposing different, every feature you expose to anybody has some risk associated with it. So start minimizing the risk in your environment by, okay, these guys and those guys want to run Postgres, and these guys are pretty awesome, so we're going to allow System5 IPC and shared memory, and we're going to make sure that their memory doesn't collide, just some cool jailing things to deal with that with System5 memory. Yeah, these are two pretty high-level development groups in our company that basically are more or less more trustworthy than, say, this contractor who has this jail doing this other thing that we don't know if they're going to be here for another month or not, or what they're going to do, right? So I'm just kind of throwing out dumb abstracts of examples. But that's one of the nice things. Say what?
What about quotas? Have you used quotas from the host?
I'm going to get to that. Just a second. Quotas blow chunks. They always have blow chunks, I have to say. For jailing purposes, they just, quotas are bad news.
So I was actually going to share something that...
Yes. Quotas are awesome?
No. Keeping track of what's where.
Keeping track of what's where.
Yeah, so it was... Not with jails, but with something else. I actually used DNS and dynamic updates from the host to register what jails were running on one host.
All right, so here's where things like DNSSEC, DNSCurve get really awesome, because if you're in a position where you can start trusting DNS in particular in meaningful ways, now within a somewhat secured network, or a totally untrusted network like the internet, or maybe I should say a completely compromised network like the internet, then, yeah, you start being able to actually do and scale and keep all of this very simple. What do we got? We got short strings, we got integers, small ones generally. These are all wonderful things to serve from DNS text records. So there you go. There's your high performance, awesome shared distribution system. Yes, exactly. Other tools could be used, like insert favorite centralized tool to store data here, kind of thing, right? I totally can see somebody doing an LDAP deploy of something, Kerberos, Spot, et cetera, to store all your jailed information. See all kinds of things come of this. What's going to be most effective? Well, it's going to be kind of environment. You know, the data is so simple. I think they would all be effective tools. When we ran the ISP, we had all of this data in MySQL databases, right? And yeah, that was pretty fast when we used MySQL for all the red parts of the application where you signed up for your system and all this other stuff. It works terrifically, right?
So it was part of the provisioning process.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah. Yeah, that was absolutely part of our provisioning process. So when we got a new net block, as we're growing, hey, new net block floods into this table. Ta-da, we have shell script to do that. Now we have this many more IPs, or now we're adding foo hardware, right? And we're going to start taking the shiny new hardware, and we're going to move our oldest, most awesome customers onto the shiny new hardware, and take the old one, and provision half the number of machines to new sign-ons, and that kind of thing, and dive. We're real squeezed water from our organization. But yes, absolutely.
That's one of the problems that I know I have with a couple of jailboxes that have a lot of users on it, who are, to me, all hostile.
Isn't that one of my jails?
It's difficult to get users and so on. I mean, I actually run a script every night that actually compares the JID and the IP to the host name.
Okay, disk we're going to talk about in just a second.
In two.
Yeah, let's do it. So we talked a lot about starting and stopping and new jail commands and running processes inside the jail. We talked about Kenshoto. We talked about SSH versus JExec and your comfortability level with different ways of working with these jail systems. And let me see, done more practical comparison. We talked about the process tree. I talked about how you use all of these wild new tools like PS. Right. So this is the idea here. It's not a lot to learn if you're working with Unix systems. And there's not a lot of weird vocabulary for a vendor to change up on you. Okay, so maybe there's a little religious stuff coming in. Sorry. But everybody in the room gets it. You get it. You see where the jails are. Talk about best practices, opportunities, blah, blah, blah. Great utilities. Actually, can you hold on just a minute more, George? We're going to get to storage in just a second. All right. And, let me see. So, great utilities. Jail-specific things, you got JPS, JKill, top, these are old ports that go way back to pre-BC4 era that were awesome. These are all just part of kill and top and PS, and your ProcFS has jailing information in the process, and all of the process data in ProcFS. Let me see, so common weak points. We talked about the hostname lockdown thing. We talked about new Perdil flags for hostname. Comments on isolation. Memory and process attacks. Before we get to disk, I'm just going to go through memory process attacks. Who's heard me talk about the hog and port bombs and all that fun stuff? Right. Okay, so make it real fast. Piece of code called hog.c. I'll try and somebody remind me to send it out to list. Brian Redmond wrote it when he was at Bell Labs, and he's claimed, and I do believe him after using it, that he's used this very simple piece of C code to take down to completely port bomb and lock up every Unix system he's ever touched since 1985. And it's real simple. It just, you compile the program, you call this program HOG with an integer, and that integer will hold that integer's worth of memory in megabytes. Combine this with a while loop from a born-like shell. This will create a very, very, very potent fork bomb, right? Yes, Mark?
I'm assuming you're running this as root and you just haven't properly set up your ulimits?
Bingo! Ulimits. Now, so dig this. If you're inside of jail and you now you have access to your configuration, all of your configuration files as root, you can change your ulimits. You could up your ulimits.
That's
a big problem. Yeah, this is a big problem. So there was this paper
here. No, don't you do what you want as far as you want to start with the master process, the global zone. You actually set hard limits on, like, this is how much RAM you can get.
Right, setting hard limits. All right, so here's the fix in jails. I was reading this paper many, many years ago, obsessed with this problem. And suddenly in, like, SysAdmin Magazine in, like, 2002, this guy, Evan Cervanto, came up with the answer. Oh, it's real simple. You know, chflags, given an immutable bit, right? What is it? etc/login.com.
Yeah.
Given an immutable bit, restart the host system in a high secure level that will not even allow root to change the file until the machine is rebooted at the lower secure level. And ta-da! Problem is solved. You now have contained stuff in the jails. Except, oh, problem is solved. Wait, this really blows chunks because... Working, how many people have run hardware at a higher secure level for any reason? After all this, I did some fun stuff. Boy, it's real hard to get any work done.
How long did it take you to roll it back down to something useful?
Yeah, about a week, actually. So here's a cool thing that's new to jails for FreeBSD 8. Per jail, secure levels. Come on, problem solved. That is a cool feature.
I am married, but I still hate you.
So what? Yeah, exactly. Right. So this is one way to mitigate the risk of fork bombs. And you now make that jail system, which is very easy to start, restart, something that has a higher secure level and is more cumbersome to work inside of. Boo-hoo. So memory process tax, blah, 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 blah. What is it? Max proc for UID. Honeypot fun. You can do all kinds of dopey stuff with a virtual server that is hard to break. One more thing on the guy who found that problem. And anybody who is interested in this project, and I know that the guy's walking in the room right now late. I know they're interested in this project. The guy who figured out that memory, that way of locking down against fork bombs, he ran a thing called the Open Root Project. The Open Root Project was a jail server that had one job. It had a web page up that had the root SSH login up for everybody to use. And this jail server was deleted and untarred fresh and restarted every hour on the hour. And at the end of the article, I started reading and they say, oh, Evan Cervanto is a 14-year-old at so-and-so junior high. And I'm like, oh my God, this is awesome. And they were just so shy of saying, yeah, Evan and his friends are all training as UX terrorists, one form or another, and blah, blah, blah. Okay, so disk resource control. This answers some of the guy in the back's questions. Disk resource is possibly the toughest thing to manage in jail systems right now. If you look at Moore's Law and all the curves for CPU, memory, all the rest of the fun stuff, all of the crazy stuff that's going on with buses and communication systems and networking cards and all kinds of fun, the only thing that hasn't budged before with Moore's Law is disk I.O. Right? It never does. It goes in these huge, big chunks where every n number of years, like 5 or 8, there'll be some dramatic improvement, and then nothing for a long time. So we're sitting in nothing still. Yeah, that guy.
Can you tell me how the limit of the speed of light imposed on Moore's Law will affect the future?
No, you're not buying me a lot more drinks for that. So the and actually, and if you buy me the drinks, I'm just going to bullshit my way through the answer. So the, no, so disks are, disk I.O. is one of the biggest problems still with resource management that you've got in any jail system. Basically, you want to read the man tuning man page on your previous D system. How many people have actually read man tuning and seen that it's been updated in years? All right, not many. It's cool. Say what? What's man? That guy with the OpenBSD t-shirt says, what's man? He's, don't you have to use ed during install man? Come on. So, the
pages aren't part of the base OpenBSD system.
Knowledge is dangerous, yes.
You can think like cut that, please.
Yeah. So look, the deal though is that a lot has improved since the previous, the old era that this lecture was first formed in with regard to segregating disk space. So you have other problems if you have a shared disk with a lot of jails on it. Like, what happens when somebody fills it up? That's probably the biggest. And now what happens when you have a huge multi-user system with a lot, yes, it is full. What happens if you have a huge multi-user system with lots and lots of jails, which also inside of them have lots and lots of users running even more lots and lots of processes, right? A lot of the, they're all disk I.O. bound.
The UIDs are not unique.
Sorry?
The UIDs are not unique.
To the host, they're not unique, no. But this is where JID in all of these base things like PS and TOP become very important. So let me get into real quick then a couple of things. Disk resource control. File back disks. I used to talk a lot about file back disks as a way of basically having a more flexible partition scheme. Right? Partitioning disks hard is about as evil in practice and having to live with it as starting your box at a high secure level. Right? Gee, we actually needed that to not. I wish we could just combine those two. Darn it. Like we're screwed. File back disks are a really cool solution to this, right? Thing is, they're kind of slow. And when I say kind of, I mean like dirt slow, like terrifyingly slow. But let me see. So look, I say deprecated ish because ZFS blows all of that stuff out of the water. So how many people in the room are familiar with ZFS? Heard of it? Yeah, okay. So ZFS is from Sun. It's awesome. Pretty much everybody's heard a lot about it, but talking about the best things you can do with it with jails. Snapshotting and cloning in what seemed to be an almost unlimited capacity. Right? So back when I was talking about tarring up your jail base after you've done some things to it, if you're using ZFS for this jail system, you can actually just snapshot it live while it's running, everything there. Clone it somewhere to a new path in the file system or a new mount. And from there, all of the ZFS magical fun takes over. Like you can dynamically allocate the actual, basically a hard limit to disk size for that. For any of your ZFS mounted file systems, you can dynamically reallocate this size. This kind of stuff becomes tremendously powerful, right? So if you've got one group of people with jail that, yeah, they need a lot of disk, but they're really respectful of this, and they run their own monitoring on disk usage for themselves, and they're really cool. And then you got somebody else who, hey, you know, this group, they don't even know if the disks fill up, and they just keep putting stuff in here. You now start being able to very flexibly control who gets how much space on the disks, right? On top of this, the idea of untarring, and this is where it comes in really handy in the environment I work in, which that guy knows something about. One of the biggest advantages to using ZFS with jail systems is that the cloning and snapshotting operations are nearly instantaneous. Untarring your jail base is not, and very, very I.O. intensive. So with that, this makes the developers' lives transparently awesome all day long, because we can deploy and nuke jail systems all day long for our heart's content, and really nobody using all the rest of the jails even feels this, right? some of the downsides to living with jails on ZFS. ZFS is a new file system. So as much as everybody's talking about how wonderful, stable, awesome it is, I have used this stuff very reliably. It's a very conservative file storage system environment. It was performance. It was safe. It fit the bill. Start getting into more of the abstract features, you're going to start getting into edge cases and new interesting problems that will make your life hurt. It's file system. File systems take years before everybody trusts them. So, what I'm basically getting at is before you're sitting in this talk going, oh my god, we're going to use ZFS and jails and this new production thing, we're going to just load it up, it's going to be awesome, we're going to deploy this next week. Yeah, test the hell out of it. We're still using the old rock solid, reliable and fast UFS for all of our production facing, our production internet facing systems. So let me see, other noteworthy things. Does anybody have any questions about ZFS? Yes.
If I had 16 jails on a single disk, all building a CDB every minute, would ZFS solve it?
Well, here's the answer to that question is, can you define the size of the CDBs and how long they take to build? Can you somehow throttle that according to the application? No, so basically what I'm saying is, you can't, how can I put it? There is no magic way to free up more disk I.O. There are plenty of ways to tune disk I.O. And by the way, certain individual back there in the red shirt, we're rebooting the primary dev box tomorrow again, applying some new ZFS settings. We'll take 5 minutes. How can I put it? Disk is the terrifyingly painful shared resource on Geos. So let's stop talking about this for a minute because, well, that sucks all around. How many other people have problems with who are not using Jailing have problems with disk I.O. in general? Wow, two hands. That's it.
Everybody else
thinks disk I.O. is just totally fast enough and awesome and acceptable in the universe today.
Yeah, it's
big. Okay. Okay. So, anyways, the things that are awesome and easy now to work with in restricted Jail. Right. Does anybody know the new FreeBSD tool CPU set? New as of 8.0? You can start a process just like using NICE. You can actually assign it a CPU or a group of CPUs, right? So you can take a number of cores and just say, this process only gets this many cores. You can start a jail with the same syntax of CPU set. So this is really awesome. You can now restrict a jail system to A or N CPUs, however many you got. That's really awesome. The
only from Solaris.
Yeah, see, so Solaris and FreeBSD are basically like, I don't know, man. They're like on again, off again friends, like up yours, dude. Like, I love you, bro.
They look kind of very cute, but they have an unfair advantage. They have a lot of people hate them to do this. I hate this. Go do this. I don't want
it. Right.
There's a check involved.
Right. See, that can work and that cannot work. Depends on the environment.
Well, it worked.
Yeah, it typically does work. And actually, the genesis of Jails is that it was written by PHK to solve a problem for a gigantic Scandinavian news agency whose web servers were constantly being rooted. So he was brought in. They were like, hey, we need to apply FreeBSD to this problem because it's secure, right? Yeah, it's fine. This thing getting rooted all the time by very, very smart script kiddies who really weren't that great, but boy, they had one up on PHK. And he said, yeah, you know what? You guys are just totally smarter than me. Cool. Let's build something to put you in a little box, and every time you root our servers, we're going to take an entry nonstop of what's going on with all our servers. Every time you root us, oh, cool. Pop, untar, restart, fine. If you're smarter than me, that's good for you. I hope we're in my class. With that said, yes, money does and paid work does help these things move along. Maybe that's why the image is moving so fast. what's his face, Bjorn Zeeb? Is it University of Zagreb? University funding on and off. He's working real hard on it. I don't know. Somebody in this room, if you can figure out how to pay Bjorn to like rock that to its natural end.
Muscular guy, right? Big, tall, muscular guy with a little girlfriend.
Polish, yes, Pavel. I will never try and say Pavel's last name because I was screwed up and I like him a lot. Pavel is from Warsaw. He's contributed a tremendous amount to all of these recent improvements in jailing, including his favorite totally, he says pointless, but there's got to be some interesting thing to this. There's a statistical and a per jail configurable to allow jails to jail that Pavel wrote just
because there was a, all the way down.
He said it was, there was beer and a weekend involved.
What about this guy all in clothes, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I mean, just, I know that, yeah.
Yeah. So that's what happens when you have a weekend and beer.
It's for the World of Warcraft previous distro, isn't it?
The, please say the jokes louder, we all want to hear them.
Previous the expansion pass, World of Warcraft.
I was kidding, alright. So, okay, so this is going on too long, so let's get this over, let's get this to a natural conclusion. Alright, file back disks, recipes, totally deprecated in the old talk. Automation, alright, so I used to say live migration. Tar, SSH, and pipes. Awesome. Alright, so feature comparison. Now I tend to say ZFS send, ZFS receive, SSH, and pipes. Same deal. So you can do some really, really cool things automating both deploys of servers, rollouts, and different types of, how can I put it, system builds, because it's all, at this point, software. Because really fascinating stuff, just let your mind wander and remember all of your favorite Unix tools. So upgrading jail systems, let's see, you want to do it inside the jail. That's pretty much all I'll say right now, unless anybody's talking afterwards, it's going to finish. Syscatool.com, this is now a mile long. I was like, look at these awesome, these are like the 8 syscatools that like the host has for working with jails. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff now. There's a lot of very cool stuff, and pretty much all of it can be done on a per jail basis when starting a jail. So, like, you've come a long way. Syscatool stock value, virtual network stack is almost there. Okay. So, yay, it's here. Well, it's almost here. Talked about this before. You're still going to see interesting things with this virtual network stack. If you think about the implementation, it'll be interesting to see this stuff like come out into the real world, because if you think about the implementation, writing a virtualized network stack gets into some very, very large and complicated hack. Large and complicated is everything that jail has been successful at not being and what's made it securable. So with, I see somebody laughing, but no, but it really, it's all about this thing working with other known or trusted tools that people work on because they have a different agenda, like your IP networking stack, right? So with this, it's going to be interesting to see what really happens. Like you were asking, gentleman was asking a question about firewalls on a per jail basis. Well, it's going to be interesting to see what comes first. Is the firewall to a particular jail and starting to control traffic and do packet filtering going to provide an environment that's more securable? Or is the complicated set of mechanics that virtualize this operation going to now be a huge surface area for attack itself, right? So it's kind of, these are going to be really fun things to look at as this starts maturing and stops panning in your kernel. Yeah?
Just a question. I know that there's been work in basically doing like a router-based Unix stack where it's like just a software-based router. Is anything going on with that boot jail?
Yeah,
you're doing it.
So I actually hit that in just a second.
Okay.
I'll fast forward. I'll get past some of the missed stuff because you can read this talk or a couple other ones over the command page. ZFS, Zpool, we've talked about it. Looks like he's IPv6. Where is it? CARP, application level failover. Where'd it go? Boy, I have totally spaced out the name after all this talking of the new and stable doesn't crash your kernel network interface, which is basically a bridge interface. It's a virtual two-sided Ethernet interface. In between, you can slide get rule sets. So this is not something you can do from inside of a jail, but on a host server, this is a very, very interesting and novel thing. It came out of the work that was going into the image and became such a novel and interesting and small and self-contained thing that everybody said, let's commit that and keep it because that's useful. But it's basically a bridge interface. So you can insert rules on both sides of this interface, ta-da, assign IPs to this interface, and it's really a Ethernet interface, more or less, something with that you can assign rule sets to both sides of. Does that kind of answer a question or not?
Yeah, it's kind of hard to look. Could it be nice to have basically a router in the box that's like the network comes into the router?
Yeah.
And then you have your jails and you route the jails and you have QoS and other router-like features there.
Okay. Gotcha. So you can use this tool. You can use this tool to do that. I'm sorry. I actually put this
here as a service that people can pay $10 a month. People pay $30 a month.
But why would you do it the same hardware? Do it separate from the hardware. I mean, for DOS purposes, for a whole lot of reasons, I would put it in the same box.
So it comes into the same box.
Well, hold on. Hold on a second.
It comes into the same box, but why wouldn't you have another layer? You know, hardware-wise, differentiated.
Okay, hold on one sec. I can't find this thing. So, if you hit the free, this is a really, really new thing, and I'm really sorry I can't remember the name of it. This is a really new thing. You can do what you're talking about. If you were to take a real Ethernet interface on the box as things come in, and behind it, you now create virtual IP interface, Ethernet interfaces that have different IPs. You can now start creating the network and slide PF rule sets in all these layers.
A virtual switch.
You got it. Okay, so from here now, you can bind a jail to one of the sides of this virtual Ethernet Say what?
How do we make it look like a Cisco switch?
I have just the color spray paint for you at home. Yes. So we've touched on all of this fun stuff. Wow. Onward. Failover with CARP. Wow. I don't have much time to talk about any of this. Basically, jails will bind to a CARP IP address. This is way easier now that you can have a jail bind to multiple IP addresses, because now the jail can have a IP address that you can use to work with, say, host A and host B. And now I have host, which is given a CARP address. It's going to bounce around between these machines. All you have to do is give host A its own IP address plus the CARP ID. Host B its own IP address plus the CARP ID. And now you've got CARP up between your own systems, right? So in applications that either don't need to maintain state or where you're looking for just straight failover, this is pretty cheap and fast. And actually, screw cheap, that dirties it. This is a very interesting and awesome solution. Okay, where's the true VM? This gets kind of old, but I'm just going to flip through this stuff fast. But basically, the gist of talking about all of this stuff, some zones, as that gentleman mentioned, are probably the closest thing to jail. They nod to jail and man pages still. There's a couple differences. Mostly there's RPCs, special IPCs that the jails can use to communicate with each other, which are awesome if your mutually interested users are trading applications all under the same company. They're really awful if it's a bunch of like internet-facing web servers, right? So other things, Zen, jail, there's all kinds of changes in Zen and growth in Zen. These are real virtual machines, right? So we're looking at an apple and oranges comparison. These are not the same tool. They do not cover the same problem. They both have benefits and weaknesses. Yes.
I haven't followed this closely for a while, but it seems like when zones first came out, what they offered a lot more control of resource constraints over jail, which jail has caught up with.
So absolutely.
So my question then is, during that time when jails are catching up with zones in terms of controlling resources, is zones, what, and in reference here, like, okay, the sun from checks up the problem, what, where has zones gone? Have they continued to grow, or they just let, they just basically...
They got bought by Oracle. I don't know where that's going now.
Okay.
I mean, that's, I don't know how to answer that. It's really straight. It hasn't been, basically, there haven't been the same kind of like...
As far as the technologies go, zones lost technically whatever competitive edge they might have had in terms of...
Over jails. Yes. Well, there haven't been the parties over the features, at least.
The thing is, the zone still has the ability to have more hardware constraints, like you can allocate 5 gigs of RAM to this zone,
yeah.
Things like that.
And those get into really awesome tools that are part of Solaris outside of zones as well.
Yeah, but
these are things that still, I would argue, need process memory control. These are things that have historically been weak in a lot of Unix systems, and some are stronger than others. Absolutely, Solaris is focused on these things, but even those solutions, I would argue, they're not perfect.
I think Oracle will fuck it up.
I'm not going to repeat that for you. People in the front. Okay, so we got Zen stuff, incorrect old stuff. Hardware hypervisor, hacks, lots of attacks on real virtual machines pointed at the most hostile manifestation of human faculties ever, the internet. Alright, so we're at the end of this. Hey, by the way, it runs on a whole bunch of platforms. More advertising. Words from the author, Paul Heinekamp, on TrueVM. People love lousy virtualization. Alright. Thanks, PHK. Let me see. Suggested reading, the original jailing paper, jails confining the omnipotent group. Even if you have no interest in jails, and you just have a lot of interest in Unix systems and system internals, this is a great paper, very fun and readable. Written by PHK and Robert Watson. That was a jailing party. That's why I shouldn't be in there. Special thanks, Wintermute Reality. These are IMU guys who ran the ISP with Puffing. All kinds of things back in the day. PHK Robert Watson. And you know, I needed to add Pavel's face to this. I need to add a fistful of other people who have done so much work to produce the aid. Sorry. I'm filling in this slot. Special thanks to Nicebug, all the rest of these funny logos, and Tablet. My employer. And special thanks, this whole talk's dedicated to all of the mutually entrusted users. This lecture will be posted somewhere around Facebook stuff. That's how you can get to me. And also a thank you from, this is the last slide of my boss's presentation from last month. I hope he's happy. If you're interested in talking about this stuff and you want to come and sit with me all day and talk to me about this stuff, my boss is hiring people. So, you know, that's how you get them. Other than that, thanks anybody. Questions? Yeah, that's it. Any questions after all that?